Like, there are things that I thought for years, and I mean, like, I wholeheartedly believed it. Even if I think my argument is correct, my methodology of how I got there is kind of flawed. So, like, do I still want to believe this like this, or do I want to believe something different? Hey y'all, welcome back to the Fast Forward Podcast. So I decided, actually, I want to film a couple of these episodes for the season 5 opening topic after doing a live stream. I was thinking about something and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to push this out real quick and get this recorded. So you'll notice that I'm wearing something that might seem eerily familiar if you watch the live streams. I'm continuing our conversation on conflict, and I wanted to talk in this episode about inner conflict because that really is the beginning of conflict management. I want to approach it from, I would say, three spaces. The first is that what you are willing to sit in conflict with will determine how you manage all conflicts. This is particularly important when you are seeking to handle conflicting information. When I hear something, or I read something, if I rush to judgment or if I rush to action and don't give myself a chance to sit in that, that is the beginning of me mishandling a conflict, period. Inner conflict is the ability to sit with information that does not align with my experiences. Inner conflict is the ability to sit with information that is new to me, that is unfamiliar to me, that I disagree with, and then break it down as an argument rather than an attack. When I hear or read something and I immediately rush to say, this is right, this is wrong, or I heard this, now I got to do this, I'm setting myself up to make poor choices because I don't even understand the core principles of the argument. When I learned it in high school, it was through formal debate. So in ninth grade, we had this teacher, shout out to Miss Kickham, at Renaissance High School in Detroit. Miss Kickham was a trip. She was off the chain in many, many ways, but she decided that she wanted to be our debate coach. And I took to debate because I just knew I was going to be a lawyer. So I needed to have my debate skills handy. When you learn formal debate, of course, you have the affirmative and the negative side, and then you do the research for that. And all of that's awesome. But one thing in particular that is interesting about debate is that when you debate, yes, you have your argument, you have your prepared research statements, positions, but then in the debate, so you have first affirmative, first negative, second affirmative, second negative, you're tossing things back and forth. A part of managing the conflict of positions is listening carefully to what is actually being said, and then sorting through that argument only on its merits, but then also through the lens of your position, and then speaking on it. All of that's happening inside. So this is one reason why I hate watching pundits on TV and all of that stuff, because people just hollering back and forth. All of the social media panel is junk. That's not how you debate, right? That's just not how you debate at all. And any debaters out there, you already know what time it is, because I'm sure it probably pisses you off too. Inner conflict is similar because it's all happening internal. So when I used to debate, one of the first things I had to learn was not to rush to disagree. And I would lose. There were times where I would get marked down or I would lose because they would say, you're not responding to that person's argument. And I ain't like to lose. So I was like, let me get this together right now and fix this. And that's really what started like sharpening my listening skills, because before I could say they're wrong, I had to make sure that I even understood what was being said. Now, let's relate that to inner conflict before I move on to the second part about what I learned in grad school. When I am experiencing inner conflict, this is me pushing against myself. And either one of those versions of me, right, can be influenced by external stimuli. So it could be somebody in my family or a coworker said something to me. And so I felt like then, okay, well, what action should I take? Should I say something back? The point still remains that I have to be clear on what all the sides of me feels before I can make a decision. So let's take, for example, you have a client discovery call, right? You're trying to do business with a new client. And this could even go if you're working in-house somewhere and you are talking to your manager about a new project that you want to work on. You hear the information from the client. They say what they need, or you hear the information from your supervisor who's trying to assign you to something. And immediately you rush to either say, yeah, I want to do that, or no, I don't. That's actually a time where you can pause within yourself to say, wait a minute. Let me make sure I actually understand what is being asked of me. Then you start to say, well, how do I feel about this initially? Like, what are the initial feelings that are coming up for me? Well, you might feel excited. Okay. You might feel angry. You might feel overwhelmed. You might feel despondent. Okay. That's a data point. Stop there. You don't need to do nothing yet. That's data point. Then you might say, you know what? This actually might be really good for my career. Or, oh, this fits into my long-term plan because I wanted to work on blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's a data point. We're still not taking action yet. So now you're starting to turn on that strategy and that strategic brain. Then you might say, well, who else needs to be involved in this? Do I like all of the people that are going to work on this with me? And then you might say, you know what? Do I have time? Right? Will this pull me away from other priorities? Then you might say, will I get credit for this? Or will I have to cede credit to somebody else? All of these are questions to ask and sit with before you make a decision. Now, depending on the answers to those things, right? You may feel happy, but also know that it's going to pull you away from your current work priorities. And you might feel like, oh, this is prestigious and I'll get credit, but also I don't like the other people I want to work with. So now you have four elements that you've assessed. Two of them are positive, two of them are negative. And so now you got a conflict internally. That's when you move to the weighting process. And that's weighting. What counts for more? So it could be, I'm excited about this, but I'm always excited to work on new projects. So that might not matter as much. And listen, this person I would have to work with, I really hate them. So I don't want to work with them. But at the same time, this is really prestigious and this going to push me toward that promotion I want, right? What element carries the most weight? And based on that weighting, that then impacts the final rating of that particular element. After you sit with all of those things, then you can make a decision. And that process, it could go for work stuff, personal stuff. You could use that if you decide who you want to date, if you want to maintain a friendship, if you want to go on a vacation. That's a process. And like I said, I learned that in debate. So when I would debate, I was usually always the first affirmative, right? And I was first affirmative and I would jump in and say, hey, you know, this is what I believe, this is what I'm standing on. Then I would have to help the person who was the second affirmative prepare their statements. And so as a part of that, it was, yeah, you the first affirmative. But because the second affirmative is focusing on did they come prepared with what they needed for their argument, is really my job to listen more to the first negative because they're probably directly rebutting what I just said. So now I have to listen carefully so that I can appropriately rate what they said, but also put the right weight to it because the end goal is to win this debate and make the best decision. Now, let's circle that back to your life. When you're talking about inner conflict, that first negative, or you could say your first rebuttal or your first detractor, that part of your mind that says, I don't want to do that. This is stupid. No, I can't. I don't believe I can. I don't have faith I can. This isn't going to work out. Whatever that voice is, before you rush to dismiss that voice, because that voice does have some validity. Now, this is where we want to sit with, again, those ratings and weightings and say, well, why is this part of me in conflict with this? Why does this part of me not want to do this? Why does this part of me feel like this isn't possible? Where does this come from? So I'll give you an example, even, you know, from my own leadership journey. Most of my career has been experiences that nobody in my immediate family has ever had, whether that is me working for large corporate entities or, you know, in some cases, certain government agencies, me being an entrepreneur, the number of times and types of relocations I've done, like, the more I've gone deeper into my career, the thinner the air is and the less I can rely on family advice. It just is what it is. And that's not a value judgment to them. It's just I have a different path. I have to be very careful with how I rate that first negative voice, because a lot of times it's coming from external voices who would not have chosen the path that I'm on, period. So they definitely wouldn't chose from the selection of choices that I have. And so whenever I catch myself saying things like, I can't do this, no, I don't believe that, this is impossible, don't do that, I have to sit with that. And I have to sit with that in part because if I go too far with saying that that first negative voice is a liar, then I'm also disparaging all of the family members who had to do what they did to get me to where I am. And that's not my goal, right? That's why I said you want to dig into the validity of the argument as it relates to you, not the external source itself. Like, I give you an example. When I was like, hey, you know what? I think it's time for me to just go into full-time entrepreneurship. Of course, my family is going to say no, right? Because I come from a working class family. So you get your decent job and you sit in that job until they tell you, you got to get up out of there. Like, you don't leave on your own. Dang, how that work, girl. And so the idea that I would choose to step away from perceived stability, that comes from a place of fear because they know how hard I worked, right, to get to the point that I could have good jobs, good paying jobs, or, you know, jobs at great companies. They also know how difficult it is for our family and that our family had to work really hard to get to the point that they could have good jobs, right? They also know that, hey, if you can't do such and such and such, I might not even be able to help you, right? And so this is where you want to be thoughtful because, again, the goal is not to disparage their fear as much as it is to affirm your choice. And so if you weight that voice appropriately, you can accomplish both goals. You can avoid disparagement and also affirm choice. So for me, part of that rating is saying, I recognize that my family is concerned about me, right? As like Kaylin, their family member. But they don't have enough knowledge and experience in this particular setting for them, their opinion to carry as much weight as, say, a mentor or my own analysis of the situation. And so maybe their weighting is like 10% of overall. And then I'm going to rate that low. So in the overall process of sorting through my choices to make a choice, it's relatively small. It's there, but it's small. Again, you replicate this process over and over and over again. Sometimes it is chasing trends. And it's funny, this part of how I thought about this to film this episode today, because I was talking about brand refresh in this live stream. When we chase trends, we put an outsized weight on what somebody else created. So if they filming content in this way, boom, I'm gonna do the same thing. If they wearing such and such type of outfit, I'm gonna do the same thing. If they, you know, filming at such and such time or in this location, I'm gonna do the same thing. No, that's too much weight on an external stimuli that you don't control. It could be that that's a great choice, but it also may be that that's not the best choice. So you also have to understand your own leaning. So I'm a person who leans away from trends. I don't like it. And sometimes it's actually to my detriment, but I don't chase doing what I saw somebody else do. In fact, if I see it's something that a bunch of people doing, I'm either going to wait until some of the dust settles or I'm going to go the other way. That's just naturally me. I have to train myself to be like, hey, actually, no, this probably is something that you want to follow as a trend, or be like, no, nah, stay away from that, you know. And sometimes it works out good for me. Sometimes I'm like, dang, I wish I had made a different choice. But the point is that it's not just monkey see, monkey do for me. It's not just they did that. They went viral. They got this money. I'm going to do that. Because I might be on something totally different and my path might require something different. And the danger of just chasing somebody else because you put so much weight on their voice to the chagrin of your own proclivities, that is sometimes going to cause some irreparable harm to your career, to your relationships, to your company. So again, going back to this debate example to wrap this up, rate your voices, weight your voices appropriately, and reason through those weightings and ratings before you make a decision. The second example I want to use is my example from when I was in grad school is a better example of it, and it is with literature reviews. So child, when I be seeing people arguing online and all of that stuff, it's like, I'm not trying to be funny, but I can usually guess education levels by how people argue. Because once you enter certain spaces or do certain things, like just certain stuff, like you just don't do, period. You are so conditioned. And even if it's, sometimes it's not even desire or interest. It literally is like conditioning that you just do things in a certain way. So when you write papers, research papers in particular, and the reason why I say is grad school more so than anything, because in undergrad, unless you go to a research institution and you have a research focused major, you're probably not writing formal research papers like you would be in grad school, where you're doing a thesis or a capstone or something like that. So you do something called a literature review. And this is one of the most important elements of your research paper, because in a literature review, you are required to go and find existing research, preferably recent. Like, they'll give you some wiggle room on this if you are using like a long-standing, well-known theory. So you can find research, you know, maybe from the original creator or something like that. But anyway, the point is you need to find googobs of research to back up not just what you are saying, but also your methodology, your style, the foundations of your argument. You also need to find conflicting research. You need to find opposing research. You need to find even like place-based or geographic references for your research. So meaning, if this is something that you are proposing for a particular country or region of the world, where else has this come up? If you're pulling from a different region, why does it make sense? Like, literature reviews are serious. And if you cannot find this information, they will completely dismiss your research. Like, it has a huge impact on your research's credibility, and not in a good way. So when I see people, it is usually online, and they'll be like, oh, it's, you know, it's such and such, or I believe this because look, it's this one article. In my head, I'm like, But I found five other articles that says I'm totally different than that, right? Or what's their methodology? Well, what's their sample size? Well, how did they pick that? Well, what is the background of that type of research? Well, who is the thinker behind this? Well, are there any opposing thoughts? Has this methodology or system been updated, right? All of that go in your literature. And how this relates to inner conflict is that sometimes we need to do literature reviews on our own thinking. Like, there are things that I thought for years, and I mean, like, I wholeheartedly believed it. But then when I started reading, talking to people, seeing existing research, seeing other people's experiences, I was like, even if I think my argument is correct, my methodology of how I got there is kind of flawed. So, like, do I still want to believe this like this, or do I want to believe something different? And I find that, interestingly enough, this comes up a lot with, like, religion and gender. I would say religion, gender, and race, maybe. So a lot of stuff dealing with identity, where you get to a point where you're like, do I still believe this? Or is this still how I want to show up in the world? Your ability to calculate those little mini literature reviews behind your arguments is going to make the difference between you eventually crashing out, just to be honest. I've been seeing this particularly in my faith. Like, I would say over the last 5 years, so since I've been in Atlanta, where things that were once so important to me, where it's like, if you're not doing this, you ain't no real Christian. And now I'm like, where I get that from? You know, like, what was the original framework that drove this? Okay, what's the validity of that framework? Does that still have a place in my life now? Am I still the same person? You know, where are the detractors of this argument? Are they right? Are they wrong? Do they have validity and credibility? But how applicable is this system, practice, belief to where I am now? And then as a result, there's some things I was like, I don't think I believe that. Right? Where it's like, no, I want to do something different. The same thing has come up with how I show up as a woman. So how I express my gender, where I'm just like, no, that's not the type of woman I want to be. You know, and I think this isn't a Dear Little Sis episode, but I will say this. I think this is super important because it's all of these femininity channels and femininity coaches, and join this femininity private members only club for $9,000 every hour. That is one way to show up as something. Same thing when we talk about masculinity. This is what manhood looks like. That is one way. That's not necessarily the only way. That's not necessarily the best way for you. That is not necessarily the most relevant way. That is not necessarily the way that's going to produce the type of life that you want. And so a part of that inner conflict is, again, doing your own little literature review to be like, is this the thing that I want? Is this going to produce the outcomes that I want? Is this a valid mindset, methodology, lifestyle that fits into who I want to be? And then you make decisions based off of that. I don't have the answers for you. And that's by design. That's why it's inner conflict. Whenever you look too much for other people to have your answers, you automatically finna flail and fail, period. Other people cannot answer your life's questions for you. That's not how it works. You have to answer your life's questions for you. You have to be the expert on you. And as you become more comfortable with sitting with conflicting ideas and using processes to sort through information to then make a decision, you will find that you'll live a more fulfilled life. It won't always be perfect, but your life will be more fulfilled, and you will find that you can stand behind your choices. Because that's part of the problem too. When you let external stuff push you to make a choice, and it's hard to stand behind those choices. You can't even justify it. You can't even explain why you did what you did, because when you're having that conversation with yourself, you don't know all the reasoning. You just know what somebody else said. And that's very dangerous. And I think that's where we coming up with a lot of the problems that folks are having too. Because it's literally just monkey see, monkey do. So-and-so said this, I'm going to do that. So-and-so said this, I'm going to do that. I don't care how important, how flashy, how sexy, how smart, how rich, how accomplished, whatever. None of that matters. You better learn how to sit with information in yourself and make the best decision for you, not based on what somebody else is talking about. All right. So that's the inner conflict piece. Again, you want to think about weightings and ratings, and then you want to do your mini literature review to sort through the validity of arguments and opposing arguments before you make a decision. Tell me, how do you handle inner conflict? How has it helped you? And sometimes how has it hurt you? Let me know down in the comments. And of course, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I will catch y'all on the next one. Bye.